One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I am back in Valencia Airport. This motor doping investigation has taken me from Brussels to Spain to France to various places. But now I am heading to Budapest in Hungary because I'm about to meet a pretty controversial man, I think it's fair to say, but a man who has been creating motors, discreet motors that can fit inside bicycles since the late 90s. And if I want to properly understand motor doping, I need to meet Stefano Vargas. I've known since the start of my investigation into motor doping that if I want to properly understand this form of cheating within professional cycling, then I must meet the producers of this technology, see for myself how it works, and ride a bike that contains a hidden motor. The only person who has been able to offer me that opportunity is Stefano Vargas. I have it on good authority that he was the inventor of some of the earliest motors fitted inside bikes that many believe were subsequently used by professional cycling teams. His name has become stubbornly attached to the term motor doping, an association he has done little to deny. But Vargas is a controversial figure, who many people have told me to stay away from. They say that, although in one sense he may be the godfather of concealed bike motors, in another he is at best a self-publicist and at worst a fantasist. I've been in touch with him on and off since the start of this investigation, and I've been unable to make my mind up about him. He has fed me tantalising morsels of information, some amounting to veiled tip-offs, but nothing concrete, and I still have my doubts. I hope that by testing out his products, I will be able to get the measure of him and his claims, and in doing so, piece together the supply chain that makes motor doping possible. So I have to ask you, have you sold a bike to a professional cyclist?
I can't say that to I sold because never came a professional racer to me directly to buy the bike, but could be happened. Why not?
We still don't know whether Femke van den Driessche will remain the only person banned from the sport for turning up to a race with a doped bike, or whether the use of hidden motors in bike racing was, maybe still is, a larger scandal. What we do know is that, at least according to Femke's family friend Nico van Mulder, after she was caught with a motor in her spare bike at the 2016 Cyclocross World Championships, a stream of cyclists were queuing up at Nico's door to have him fit motors in their own bikes. If Nico's claim is true, then someone somewhere must have been making motors knowing that many of them were ending up being used by cheating cyclists. was the kingpin in this supply chain, the notorious motor inventor, Stefano Varius.
The obvious question to that is, who is buying an electromagnetic wheel?
Who has enough interest and enough money to do that?
I'm Chris Marshall-Bell, and from Stack, this is Ghost in the Machine. Episode 6, The Inventor of Motor Doping.
Please stow only your bigger luggage into the overhead locker or your backpack. Smaller bags will be removed from the head bins. Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
It's 2 a.m. in the morning as I arrive in Budapest, and there's a light dusting of snow on the ground, the streetlights providing a winter glitter. After waking up, I have breakfast in a local cafe and walk to the New Gatti Central Station. Varius and I haven't discussed the order of the day, but we have at least agreed that this train station is where he will pick me up, and he's told me to look out for his burgundy Toyota minivan.
So I was meant to be meeting Stefano Varius outside of the Neo Gutti train station in Budapest, but I've been here 45 minutes and he's still not turned up. Is he coming? Have I been stitched up? He's just texted me to say 6 minutes away. I believe him.
Patience, boy, patience. 10 minutes later, I spot him.
Stefano!
Hello.
Ciao. Ciao. Nice to meet you.
I climb into his van and he drives us out of the Hungarian capital.
How are you?
Varius is a large man in his early 50s, with short greying hair and a slightly weathered face. He's dressed in blue jeans, a grey t-shirt, and a black down jacket. Though he's got a cheeky smile, he has a tough guy vibe, the sort of man you definitely wouldn't mess with. He tells me that first on the itinerary is a drive up to Normafa, a vantage point that looks down on the historic city. I'm not quite sure why we're heading up there, but as we do so, thousands of snowy roofs stretch out in front of me, Buda Castle and the Parliament Building glisten in the winter sun, and I count off the many bridges that cross the River Danube. It's immediately clear to me that Varius is exactly the same in person as he has been on the phone. He dominates the conversation, controls the narrative, often spirals off in tangents and throws in wild claims, tales and accusations about motor doping. I tried to squeeze in questions between his tirades, but I'm also aware that actions speak louder than words. I want to know if his products are really as good as he claims, and before flying to Hungary, I got Varius to promise me that he would let me ride one of his motorized bikes. But when that'll happen, I don't know. He packs up and leads us into a park cafe. It's lunchtime, he tells me, and he duly treats me to a bowl of goulash. While eating, we talk Hungarian politics, and he informs me that he's an advocate of Prime Minister Viktor Orbán's low tax regime. He also regales me with more tantalising tales of motors, which I scribble down on my phone's notes whenever I have a moment by myself. Just as we're about to leave the cafe, he tells me our next stop will be a nearby quiet street where I can finally test out a motorised bike. As soon as we park up next to an eerie looking energy facility with army guards on the door, Varius has one clear message for me.
But no, don't video, no picture.
No picture. It's just recording.
Yes.
Okay.
I can't take videos or photos of the unbranded bike, he says, because it belongs to a current professional. Before we met, Varius told me repeatedly that he did not supply bikes directly to pro riders, only to middlemen, always insisting that he could not be held accountable for where his products ended up. But now, after just an hour in his company, he's handing me a motorised bike that he claims belongs to a pro. Eh?
Stefano, we've just got out a bike from your car. Did you make this bike?
Yeah, of course.
And can you tell me how the engine works in this bike?
Just, you have a hidden button. You just push shortly, and then it's starting to increase the power, and when you not need more, then you just push long, then it stop by itself.
Okay, and where is the engine hidden?
It's in the C-tube.
It's in the C-tube, okay.
It's here.
And how big will this engine be? Will it be like 57?
Various tells me that the motor is 30 millimeters long. That's the length of a standard SD memory card, and that it is placed at the bottom of the bike's frame where it connects to the drivetrain. The battery is 25 centimeters long and is hidden in the seat post, stored vertically down the frame. As for the button to engage the motor,
so the button to turn on the engine is under the handlebar hood, and there's a very thin wire. And this wire is obviously hidden. Yeah, this wire would obviously be hidden by the handlebar tape, and then the wire goes, feeds back through the handlebar and then back through the frame and then into the engine, which is under... Well,
this is definitely not a wireless, fully Bluetooth operation, but the wires are covered by a plastic mount on the frame that is standard on most high-end bikes, and then further concealed by a bottle cage and a water bottle that sit on top of the mount. In other words, you can't see anything untoward. The motor and all its parts are completely hidden from view. It looks like any other normal road bike you might find in a bike race.
Okay, so if I'm now going to ride this bike, I'm going to get on it, and the button for me is on the right of the handlebar. Just to the right, okay. Okay.
I put my leg over the bike and I start to wheel away. If I press the button hidden under the handlebar tape once, I'll get a light boost. But press it twice and I'll get double the power.
Okay, so I'm riding and I'll be honest, I don't really feel the difference too much. Okay, you can hear that?
But then I press the button properly and it whirs into life.
That seemed too obvious to me, if I'm being honest. Oh, okay, now I feel it.
The noise from the motor, as you can hear, is noticeable. But Various insists that in a race situation, with the sound of the free hubs, gears shifting, the passing wind, and roadside spectators, the motor wouldn't be audible. From my experience of being at hundreds of bike races, I think he's right, but I did expect the motor to be quieter. After a few more spins, I familiarise myself with the button and the bike, and become more impressed.
So now I am going up a hill. And the engine is on, it's given me, I mean, I don't know exactly how many watts it's given me, because I've not got a cycle computer on the bike, but it's effortless. It's absolutely effortless. It's remarkable, actually, to be honest. And then when you brake, it immediately turns off. And I'm going to go downhill, and obviously it's going to be fine, and I'll turn it back on.
I'm getting in as many laps of the short hill as my cold, gloveless hands will permit.
I'm going to take my feet off the pedals. That is incredible. The pedals continue to spin. But it runs out after you when you're doing less than 40 cadence. So it would eventually just stop. Eventually. Because the pedals are not turning naturally. Wow. And now I've turned the engine off and it immediately became a lot harder to go up the hill because, well, it's a 6% incline. That's remarkable. That is utterly remarkable. I'm stunned, actually.
You might have ridden an e-bike, and though the feeling and function is similar, the stunning difference about this bike is that it has no giveaway fat battery and is not noticeably heavier. It looks like the bike we see pros riding in races. I totally get why someone would think they'd be able to get away with this form of cheating. For a brief moment, as I pedal up the hill, I feel like I could win the Tour de France. But seriously, I can imagine that even someone with an average level of fitness might be able to win pro races on a bike like this. It's really not inconceivable. That said, I still have to shave my legs.
I mean, can I just before we put it back in the car, I'm just going to lift it up. Okay, it's not feather light, but how much does this weigh? Yeah. Probably about about 9 kilo, yeah.
9 kilo,
yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And because of the batteries, it's too much battery inside.
Yeah, okay. But just to look at it, it looks exactly the same as any road bike.
When I lift the bike up, I can feel the weight of the motor inside it, which dampens my excitement a little. Would it actually be feasible to cheat in a pro race for a bike this heavy? It is true that the UCI, Cycling's World Governing Body, occasionally weighs bikes, but mostly to make sure they're not lighter than 6.8 kilograms, the minimum permitted weight. UCI officials are primed to look for bikes that are too light rather than too heavy. When I draw attention to the added weight on the bike, Various tells me that riders on the biggest pro teams can purchase lighter motors that give the equivalent of a 50-watt boost. Not because they want less power, but because they want more subtlety. The lighter and smaller batteries mean that such a motor adds only 500 grams to the bike, an amount that the rider could plausibly argue was due to a slightly heavier handlebar or wheel. This I find very persuasive. If a pro were to use a motorized bike in a race, it would have to remain a similar weight as non-doped bikes. Otherwise, it'd just be too obvious. The question now is Stefano Various providing professional cyclists with motors with which they're duping the entire sport? Having put the bike away, Various tells me to get back in the van. He's agreed to a sit-down interview, and hopefully that's where we're going now. He drives us down the hill, past the mansions and big houses overlooking the River Danube, and we reach a tram crossing. We're forced to pause while one of the city's famous and rickety 1970s trams trundles by. He then parks outside a quaint-looking cafe and nods at me to get out. Once inside, he seats us at a table in the far corner of a conservatory extension of the cafe, then orders us both cakes and coffees. I mistakenly choose a marzipan cake that turns out to be completely tasteless. Never mind. I place the recorder in front of us and press the on button. For the first time all day, it's me who's dictating the conversation. I've now been in Various's company for 4 hours, and I'm not exactly charmed by him, but he's compelling, slightly intimidating, but cheeky, and definitely engaging. He's hard to work out. So my first question is, just who are you?
So my name is Stefano Various, as they know. I born in Hungary. I working actually with the ePowers brand, and just creating these hidden engine bikes. I created new kind of drive system. Actually, I live in Hungary and Italy, Monaco, where I have the main supplier.
Various explains that he was a cyclist in his youth, claiming to be a 13-time national champion across various cycling disciplines. He even proudly tells me that in 1989, he raced in the Junior World Championships in Moscow, finishing ahead of Lance Armstrong. I try to verify the Hungarian titles, but my requests to the National Cycling Federation go unanswered. But when I check whether he did indeed beat Lance Armstrong as a junior, I'm amazed to find that, yeah, it's true. Nowadays, he splits his time between living in Hungary, Italy, and Monaco, and he speaks fluent Hungarian, English, French, and Italian. He mostly operates out of Monaco, a small principality in the French Riviera, famous for its tax benefits and A-list celebrities. He also says he acts as a consultant for a Monaco-based cycling firm, whose identity he won't reveal, and that he is the owner of a Hungarian electronic bike brand called ePowers. Various first came to public attention around a decade ago, when he alleged that an unnamed leading Tour de France team had paid him $2 million for exclusive rights and use of his motor technology for a period of 10 years from the late 1990s. He's never provided evidence of this, although did provide bank records to American broadcaster CBS that showed he had about $2 million in his account in 1998. To further reassure me of his credentials, before our meeting he shared European patent documents with me that appear to confirm him as the inventor of several motors. Just to be clear, Various did not invent the first motor suitable to be used in a bike. It's hard to trace the roots of the first motor-assisted bicycle. But what we can say is that Various has been at the forefront of the concealed bike motor industry for almost 3 decades, in passing himself off as the godfather, the pioneer, of this concealed motor technology. He makes a convincing case. After the exclusive period of 10 years with the unnamed cycling team supposedly lapsed, he claims he returned to the market as a producer of motors in 2009 for bike manufacturer Carrera, and since then he has worked for several more leading bike manufacturers. I reached out to them all to check this information, but none of them responded to me. If he is to be believed, Varius has been a man in demand almost constantly over the years. One of the first things he tells me is that he has four types of motors. The first, the type designed to be hidden inside the bike's frame, is the one I've just ridden, and similar, but not the same, as the type Femke was found with. I don't need another explanation as to how it works, but I do want to know how easy or difficult it would be for a pro bike rider to get their hands on one.
In this case, if I make my normal mid-engine like seat engine or in the down tube engine, it's cost like €20,000 the works.
That's not cheap. Femke's VVAX Assist motor costs €2,500 and could be installed at home. Varius's offering is 8 times more expensive. Why is there a markup of 800%? For that amount of money, a buyer has to be taking cycling very seriously. The cost implies you've got to be a pro on a good contract and with the possibility of winning high-profile races to make the money back. None of the racing amateurs I know would be able to justify such an expensive outlay. But it's not the motor frame that Varius is most infused by.
Also, there is a possibility to helping for the rider if the engine on the hub, in the rear hub.
The rear hub is located in the centre of the rear wheel. Is the attachment point of the spokes, and its core allows the wheel to turn freely while staying securely attached to the bike's frame.
It gives less assistance, but you have the possibility in downhill or in the peloton, you can recharge the battery. So this system is more light than the middle engine, and it has a less battery necessity, and with this affecting that the bicycle became lighter than a mid-engine bicycle.
The rear hub motor sounds a lot better then. It's lighter, smaller, and the battery can recharge itself. I asked to see one, but he says that's not possible today. Can't hide my frustration. But learning of the rear hub motor reminds me of a news report I read from the 2021 Tour de France, when 3 undisclosed riders told the Swiss newspaper Le Temps that they had heard noises coming from the rear wheels of multiple teams. The sound, one rider said, was a metallic noise, and another claimed that 4 teams have this little sizzle in the rear wheel. Another said, "We are talking about a device hidden in the hub. It's power through the brakes, and inertia is stored, like in Formula One. I've never heard that anywhere before." No evidence was ever found that linked the reported noise to motors. Varius tells me that the rear hub motor costs €15,000. It doesn't make them cheap, does he? And also caveats their benefits by pointing out that it does have its drawbacks.
In a bike, it's also invisible. It's the only handicap of this system that if you make a flat tire, then you have to change the bike because the wire is go through the axis in the back wheel.
The fact that a wire needs to go from the rear hub, which is in the wheel, to the battery in the frame, does appear to make the rear hub motor more complicated and less practical. But moving on. Ready for invention number 3? Meet Varius's first of 2 wheel-based products, an autonomous disc wheel which packs the motor and battery inside the wheel's hub and which can recharge itself during descents. A disc wheel is completely closed between the hub and the rim. There are no spokes. They're used in time trials and velodrome track cycling.
I have also a wheel which you are able, it's like especially the lenticular wheel, the disc wheel, when everything is inside. That means, this disc wheel system is autonomous completely. You can put in any bikes, you can remove from them because it's everything integrated in the disc. So it's 2 kilo more heavy than a normal wheel. But it gives you even 1,000 watt of power, so you can use it for sprint, you can use it for chrono. This kind of wheel is cost like €35,000.
I know what you're thinking. Yes, that's an eye-watering price, but a wheel 2 kilograms heavier and with an assistance of 1,000 watts, basically the power of 2.5 pros, it's just too obvious. Varius explains that, as of all of his technological inventions, batteries and motors can be reduced in size and weight, and the corresponding power is thus reduced to make the end product subtler. He claims to have sold a few autonomous disc wheels that produce between 200 and 250 watts, but won't give me any indication as to who he sold them to.
From 200 gram to 2 kilo, the battery. So it depends on what do you need.
So if a Tour de France cyclist wanted a motor in their bike, I imagine they would have the smallest battery, correct?
Yes, you can using any battery. It's even small. Yes, of course it's small. But for them, they not need a huge autonomy, because on the critical moment they need only to have an assistance.
An assistance of what? 50 watts? Or?
Even 30 watts, 50 watts, 60 watts, doesn't matter how much.
He then tells me what I've been told before. Riders with a concealed motor might not even have to press a button to activate it.
Oh, you can do it even with heart rate monitor. You can do it even for telecommando from the accompanying cars. So you can do what you want in the middle of the road. So it doesn't matter where it's going.
So how would the heart rate monitor work? So, for example, when my heart rate went above 160 beats per minute, it would click into gear?
Yeah, after it started to acting, until your heartbeat is became below 160.
It's high-tech stuff. Finally, he tells me about the invention I keep hearing all about, the electromagnetic wheel, the supposed motored assistance that is simply impossible for authorities to detect.
Magnetic wheels, which is completely undetectable, which is only coils inside, there's any engine, and this kind of wheels you are able to using even in pair or only in the rear wheel, that cost €200,000, one kind of.
€200,000?
Of course, with this, because it gives you this 60 watts, 80 watts differences.
€200,000? Jeez, I could buy a house for that. An electromagnetic wheel has multiple permanent magnets hidden around the wheel. The arrangement of magnets is pushed and pulled by a further arrangement of non-moving electromagnets that are hidden away somewhere within the structure of the bike, close to the wheel as it rotates, such as on the bike's forks. The activation of the motor is controlled by a drive unit, and the turning of the wheel will also generate energy. Energy may be stored in a small, compact energy storage device, such as an efficient battery, or even a supercapacitor, and can be activated with the press of a button or via wireless function.
Magnetic wheel is another story. It's just a booster. It's gives you like 60, 80 watts in the end of the day, which one is not. I think is only for competition, can be considered as a real tools enhancing the power of the racer.
Frustratingly, Varius says he can't show me any of his two wheel inventions today. And on further digging, I find out that other people have only seen prototype versions. How am I meant to believe these magical wheels exist if I can't see them? But the enthusiasm in which Varius talks up his electromagnetic wheels makes me believe that they could be real. And the way he describes how they operate is ghostly, a literal ghost in the machine.
The obvious question to that is, who is buying an electromagnetic wheel?
Who has enough interest and enough money to do that?
He smiles, there's a glint in his eye, and as he takes a drink of his coffee, he watches me intently. He knows I'm fishing for hints as to who his customers are.
No, my clients came all over the world. After, if they're using for cheating or for racing or for rehabilitation or for enjoy light bike, is their problem, is not my problem.
This is Varius's go-to line. He makes the product, and if it so happens to fall into the hands of a pro cyclist, oh well, not his problem. He's just the inventor and the creator.
I can't say that to I saw it, because never came a professional racer to me directly to buy the bike, but could be happened. Why not?
This is worth repeating. A pro bike rider, he says, could have used one of his products. Why not? He adds, forgetting, or choosing not to care about, the grave implications for the sport. When I first made contact with Varius a year ago and asked him for the first time if motors have ever been used in professional cycling, he answered me, VVAC sold more than 15,000 motors. If you think all of these 15,000 motors went to the general public for touristic purposes, I think I just answered your question.
Sorry, Ken?
Do you think we ever will have a case of a big professional rider who gets caught with a motor in their bike?
You know, just you have to see the performance of that any racers. If the performance is go out of the range, which can be acceptable and explainable, then you have to think something else. If something strange performance you can see on the television, because the show must go on.
Do you share the opinion then that if there were motors in the peloton and we found out that there were, it's too big a scandal for cycling? It's too dangerous for cycling?
Of course, I think yes. Of course, for this reason, have to be very careful, acting very carefully.
What does he mean, to act carefully?
The life is always in danger, but it's important to not cross the way of some interest. Then I think I not need to be in danger. I will not in danger. I don't think I said anything. I don't think I did anything wrong. I just make my job. The life is always in danger.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
With the day turning to evening and a stunning sunset painting the sky orange, we finish our coffees and cake and Varys instructs me to get back in the car. It quickly becomes apparent that we're driving out of Budapest and toward a suburban village. As we hurtle down a secondary road at 90 kilometers per hour, he tells me that we're just a few kilometers from our destination. Enough time, I figure, to tell him about one story I've heard, a case alleging motor use by a current major professional cycling team. It's a story that has been relayed to me by several people, all with almost identical versions of the same incriminating tale. The basics are that a sponsor pulled out having become aware of motors hidden inside the team's bikes. Varys listens intently to what I'm saying, craning his neck to listen even closer. When I wrap up my story, it's obvious that I've hit a nerve. His mood changes suddenly and dramatically, and he immediately takes his foot off the accelerator, slowing us down almost to a complete crawl. Who told you that? He interrogates me. I'm not recording, but his questions are seared into my memory. Which riders are speaking with you? He presses. There is a tense silence for a minute as we head down an unlit, darkened village road. I repeat what I've heard, but insist that I cannot reveal my sources. I want to know if it correlates with information that he has, but he's more concerned with who told me. His previously relaxed, domineering persona has been replaced by a more guarded one. For the first time, he looks anxious. All day he has been hinting that a new motor-doping scandal could be around the corner. Is he realising that I know more about motors than he expected? We stop in the village, Varius gets out, and he briefly leaves me alone in the van. When he comes back, he says he has collected a washer from a supplier that will be used to silence a motor. He then stares at me dead straight in the eyes, doing little to soften the strained atmosphere that has descended between us. If the scandal happens, he tells me, if it happens, remember this story. Remember what you've just told me. Remember it. It's hard to read into what's just happened. He could just be being theatrical, but I sense a genuine and authentic change in his mood and demeanour. Is he wanting me to believe that I finally struck gold? Or is this just him acting his role in the conversation yet again? I keep trying my luck for more conclusive information, asking him more probing questions. He doesn't deny any of the details that I share with him, but nor does he give me any precise information that will substantiate what I had already heard about this specific case. But what he does tell me is that some of his clients, without naming names or the level of competition, have previously been caught by race judges and officials with concealed motors in their bikes. But the transgression was kept under wraps, with everyone aware of the reputational damage it would cause to an already stained and scrutinised sport. He even alleges that another top cycling team had motors fitted in their bikes a few years ago, but not by him. If what he is saying is true, it means that two of the sport's biggest teams have used motors in major races as recently as last season, and that many of those races have been won by riders using motor-assisted bikes. Although I have no hard evidence, these claims, plus the other anecdotes I continue to be told about, all amount to a growing feeling that motor doping is still plaguing professional cycling in 2004. It does not seem to be just a fantasy and a conspiracy. After driving back into Budapest, the next step on his agenda is dinner in a shopping centre mall. He insists yet again that because I'm his guest, he'll pay. But the conversation over pasta dries up. The silence at least gives me time and space to ponder and dissect what Varius has been telling me all day. A lot of people would say that he is only speaking with me in the media for free advertisement for his services. If he really is the kingpin of motor doping, why is he buying dinner for a journalist intent on exposing the scandal? It makes no sense. Could the fact that he feels a need to talk up his inventions be construed as a sign of a less than successful business? He really doesn't have much to gain from me apart from the hope that you, dear listener, will Google his name and buy a bike from his Hungarian shop, ePowers. With the doubts mounting, how can we possibly believe his claims? To a lot of people embedded in the sport, they simply don't. Remember Mark Barfield, the UCI's former technical manager, telling us this in episode 5?
Vajas is a self-publicist. I've never met him, but he's a self-publicist and his technology really isn't very good.
Many others share Barfield's assessment, including Brian Cookson, the UCI president when Femke was caught and the man who introduced the first wave of detection systems.
I don't think we've seen anywhere any of these other magic hubs or magic solutions and magic wheels and all this kind of stuff. Other than in the imagination of some of the wilder sections of the media and our friend from Hungary, Mr. Vargas.
Although Barfield and Cookson led the UCI's initial fight against motor doping, I don't place too much weight on their opinion of Varius. It's not that I disagree with them, but more that I get the impression that they just dismiss him outright without having properly investigated him and his products. But I do make contact with two people deeply enmeshed in the world of pro cycling who have spent a lot of time in Varius's company. I ask them for a character assessment of Varius and cross-reference a number of points with them to see if his stories are consistent. Though unwilling to go on the record, one tells me that while Varius has good ideas, he doesn't have the engineering background to fulfil his dreams. They even suggest that his products aren't certified and don't meet EU safety standards. They praise his enthusiasm, but add that his electromagnetic motor, while possible, has never been a serious proposition. He'll never come close to making it work, they add. The second person I call admits that they were initially very sceptical of Varius, but that they became convinced by him and his products when engineers operating in elite circles described him as, and this is a direct quote, the single most brilliant engineer they've ever met. The person added that Varius showed them documents, paper trails and bikes that persuaded them that his products have been used in pro cycling. When I asked them why they think Varius is so willing to open himself up to the media, they say, it's an ego thing. He has so much pride, he thinks he's brilliant, but he's never been recognised for his work. The responses from the two contacts could not be any more different. It's clear that Stefano Varius really is bike racing's Mr. Marmite. You'll have to make up your own mind on what to believe about Stefano Varius. Is he deserving of the title bestowed on him as the inventor of motor doping, a man who has provided professional cyclists with hidden motors that they've used to win professional bike races? Or is he instead just a slightly maverick and self-publicising Mr. Gadget with a thirst for alternative truths? I flew to Hungary for a number of reasons. To get a measure of Varius and his technology, to see if he and his motors were a genuine threat to the sport's integrity, or just fanciful nonsense. To determine, and there's really no better way of putting this, if he is a bullshitter or not. And to find out if he could give me information that would aid my investigation, always conscious that he might lead me down paths trodden only by conspiracists. I believe he has developed concealed bike motors and that he continues to be deeply involved in this field. My gut feeling is that some of his scattergun barrage of claims, allegations and anecdotes must be true. Some of them seem too detailed to be completely fabricated. That said, I do still have doubts about the veracity of some of his stories that seem too far-fetched. Do I believe he sold motors to pro riders and teams at various points in the last 25 plus years? If I were forced to guess, I'd say yeah, I do believe so. Although I stress, I've received no hard evidence of that. The weight and the sound of the motored bike remain at the forefront of my mind, as two nagging doubts. If Varius really wanted to convince me that a bike rider could get away with riding a dope bike in a pro race, he should have shown me a bike with a much lighter and quieter motor inside it. By meeting Varius, I wanted to put myself in the mind of a professional cyclist wanting to cheat in this way. How much would it cost? Would he fit it for me? Would I get away with it? The figure that he quotes to fit an invisible motor is north of 20,000 euros. I ring around other motor producers in Germany, Italy, Monaco and Belgium, and though their products are cheaper, coming in at around 3,000 euros, the cables and batteries are housed in small boxes that are attached under the saddle, or in a water bottle. By these comparisons, Varius's technology is clearly the one I'd opt for if I had the money and wanted to minimise the risk of being caught. As we've learned in previous episodes, cycling's world governing body, the UCI, has three lots of detection systems in place to combat motor doping, two types of X-ray machines and a magnetic scanner. The problem is, the testing is erratic, and as many engineers emailed me after episode 5, the UCI's approach looks amateurish and ill thought through. During the recording of this episode, it is announced that Mick Rogers, the man who has been responsible for the UCI's fight against motor doping since 2020, has left his role and been replaced by a former Homeland Security criminal investigator who has also worked for FIFA in tackling match fixing in football.
I have a 13-year career in US law enforcement prior to joining FIFA to become an integrity manager to tackle the problem in match manipulation.
It sounded all very kind of John Grisham, didn't it? Quite a high-level appointment and technological fraud, lots been said and written about that. It's an issue that sort of, well, it's kind of faded from the agenda slightly, I would say, in the last 2 or 3 years. There's been some good reporting that's done by one of our colleagues in the last few months, Chris Marshall Bell, who's been investigating this issue.
Is it because of Ghost in the Machine that the UCI have decided they need to change strategy? Have we rustled a few feathers and scared them into action? Before the 2024 men's Paris-Roubaix, a race in which a hidden motor would definitely be helpful, I briefly caught up with UCI's president, David Lapartient. He once again gave me the impression that the UCI have credible concerns about the presence of motors. As we said goodbye, he reassured me that we'd have a proper interview soon. And almost as soon as I got back home, an email landed in my inbox. I had been summoned to the UCI's headquarters. In the next episode of Ghost in the Machine, we will put David Lapartient and the UCI's new investigator, dubbed Mr. Tough Guy, under the spotlight. Is this big statement appointment of a US law enforcer finally going to eradicate the risk of motor doping? Or is this just yet more theatre, yet more kick in the can down the road? What are their ideas? Is artificial intelligence and the analysis of power files about to form the basis of a new detection system? That's certainly what Lapartient hinted to Cycling News back in January.
These new technologies, this IA, will also help us to detect at least or target this rider. It may be a problem with the number of watts, with the comparison with all the data that we have. So I think there is clearly a bridge, and we spoke with them how we can also use their technology. I'm sure, yes, more to come on this.
Whatever they rustle up, one big question remains. Assuming that a pro rider handed over a wad of banknotes to Stefano Varius and got him to tinker with their bike, would they then get away with motor doping in the Tour de France? Would the UCI be able and willing to stop them? You have been listening to episode 6 of Ghost in the Machine. And remember, if you have any information that could aid our investigation, you can email us at motordoping@gmail.com. That's motordoping@gmail.com. See you soon. Ghost in the Machine is a Stack production. It is presented by me, Chris Marshall Bell, the podcast's general classification contender. It was written by myself and David Bradford, the sports director of the series. Sound design is by Tom Worley, the podcast's lead out man. It was produced by Pete Donaldson, the road captain. A special thanks to Super Domestique, Christophe Moule. And a thanks also to the Three Swan Years, Finn Ranson, Charlie Morgan, and Katie Baxter. Chapeau.
Ghost in the Machine is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out for a chance to win the French Open title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV, live in HD. Don't miss a moment with daily live coverage and match replays on demand, beginning Monday, May 20th. Be there for all the unforgettable moments. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search second tier in your podcast app
and hit subscribe.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.